is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, are all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.
Hello, you're listening to DNA Today, a genetics podcast and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. DNA Today informs you on what's happening in the genetic world. During my broadcast, I educate you, the public, on genetic and health topics through event coverage, news stories, book movie reviews, and interviews. Guests include genetic counselors, researchers, patient advocates, and professors in the field of genetics. Joining me today is Bo Bigelow. Bo made national news when he used Reddit and social media to find a diagnosis for the genetic disorder his daughter faces. Those same efforts led him to a researcher who's now investigating the disorder. Bo hosts another podcast, Stronger Every Day, highly recommend it, and has written a book of the same name, as well as several novels. He co-founded Maine Rare. He was the state leader for Rare Disease Day in Maine for NORD, National Organization for Rare Disorders. And he's also a lawyer. So thanks so much for coming on the show, Bo.
Thanks for having me, Kira. It's great to be with you.
Definitely. And it's a fellow podcaster, so I feel like we already have a connection. So tell us a little bit about your daughter, Tess.
Sure. So Tess is 7 and she's a really sweet, happy, very social girl. She's nonverbal, so she doesn't have words, but she still is very loving and able to express herself quite a bit. And she happens to have this ultra rare genetic disorder that is so rare that it doesn't have a name.
Wow. So rare it doesn't even have a name. So many kids have this disorder that we know about?
Right now, we know of 23 in the world. We think there are a lot
world.
More.
Wow.
Yeah, 23. And so Tess was the 8th patient diagnosed with it. So there were 7 before her. Yeah. So it's pretty rare.
And so you said that this disorder doesn't have a name. How do you refer to it within your community?
Well, the name we have doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, but it's the only one we have for now, which is USP7-related disorder. USP7 is the gene in Tess that is that has a mutation. And the way we found that out was through whole exome sequencing. We took some genetic material from my wife and from me and from Tess and just figured out where do these not match up. And then when we did that, we saw that there was this mutation in this gene called USP7, which we had never heard of before. And this was at the end of many years of genetic testing that had not given us an answer about what was going on with Tess. And the geneticist said, listen, we now know that this is the gene, but this is kind of where our journey ends with you guys. You know, we wish you luck, but we don't know enough about this gene to really help you any further. So good luck with that, kind of is how they were.
And so it was a variant of unknown significance. Is that how it's categorized?
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly what it was on her genetic forms. And so for a long time, for many months, my wife and I just kind of tried to be at peace with that idea that we were never really going to go any further, that even though we'd isolated the gene, there was nothing more that we could really do. And there was nobody else that we knew that had this. And so what I would do is, I think what a lot of parents do in this scenario is get on Google and look stuff up all the time, try to find, you know, anything out there about the gene. And we were coming up snake eyes on that role and just couldn't find anything about it for a really long time. So that was what we did, is just kind of decide to be cool with it and not go any further and just be at peace with not knowing anymore and not finding any more patients. And that was a really hard thing to do. It doesn't come easily to my wife and me. We don't really give up on stuff. We're kind of type A people. And so that was a hard thing to do. And then everything changed one day a couple summers ago when I read this article in The New Yorker by this guy named Seth Mnookin, and it was about another family in the same scenario that ours was in, and this other dad, this guy named Matt Mite, who was in the same position where, you know, they knew their gene and they knew it was, you know, a variant of unknown significance, and they knew that there wasn't anybody else out there that they knew of that had this, and they didn't give up. Matt had this whole plan. He's kind of a computer science guy, and so he knew that parents like me stay up late and Google stuff at night. And so his idea was, rather than continuing to Google stuff about his gene, what he would do is create this internet beacon, basically a web page all about his son and his gene and his particular, you know, that put in the genetic language on this web page and set this thing up and let other people find him, let researchers find him. And it worked for him. And so he shared his method online. He has this whole amazing blueprint that is called, you know, using the internet to find rare patients. It's unbelievable. It's really great. And so I just followed his blueprint and set this thing up to try to find more people. And that was what we did.
So you set up a web page to find, so that other people and parents like yourself could find you and you could connect.
Yeah, that was the idea. And at the time we said, you know, Tess is the only one of her kind in the world that we know of. And this could take a really long time for us to find even one other person, but let's try, you know, deep breath. Let's give this a go and actually get back in the game here. And it was unreal because less than 24 hours later, we got an email from this guy in Texas, this researcher who works at Baylor College of Medicine, this guy, Mike Fountain. And he emailed me and my wife and he said, we should talk. I study this gene. I study the USP7 gene and I know of other patients. Let's get on the phone.
So that's amazing. A genetic researcher specializing in studying the gene that's affected in your daughter that has possibly de novo mutation or a variant of unknown significance is studying that gene and contacts you 24 hours after you uploaded this website.
That's right.
Like that's the internet for you. That's how we're all connecting.
It can be used for good.
Definitely.
Yeah. We traced it out and figured out what had happened. So I was all over Facebook and Twitter with it, but I was not on Reddit at all. But a friend of a friend, is, and he turned around and went to the genetics subreddit and shared it there. And someone saw that, and that person knew Mike. So it was like, you know, 3 or 4 degrees of separation. But, you know, this friend of Mike Fountain said, hey, Mike, isn't this the gene that you study? You should contact this person. And that's how it happened.
And so how did it take off from there in terms of, did you go there and meet him and did Tess meet him?
So from there, we got on the phone with Mike the next day, and he said he was about to publish. He works with this guy, Dr. Christian Schaff, who is he runs a lab at Baylor, and he is kind of the expert on this gene and this disease. And he's Mike told us there were 7 other patients, and that he and Christian and a group of other scientists, a bunch of researchers, were about to publish this paper about those 7 patients. But that, you know, that was only the beginning of their work on USP7, and that they wanted to establish a relationship with us. And you know, those guys, the work that they do keeps them really occupied. And you know, they said to me, listen, we are not really active on the social media thing, but you are. So now that you're in, can you find us some more people? Can you find us more patients? And my wife and I said, yeah, we can do that. And so that was our goal for, and continues to be our goal, is to find more people. So Tess was number 8, and we spent, you know, we've spent the last couple of years trying to find more people, and now we're up to 23. And we did get to go and meet Dr. Schaff and Mike Fountain. We had our first family conference for USP7 this past April. We all went to Baylor. So at the time there were 21, I think, families, and about a third of them are active and on Facebook and communicating. The rest, we don't know a whole lot about them. We just have, you know, the guys at Baylor have their data, and we know, so there's a couple families in France that we're in touch with, but there are, I believe, a couple who are in Turkey who are not in contact with us, and there's some all over the world. So about a third of us are really communicating, and that's how many families. There are about 7 of us families who went to Baylor and met each other for the first time and met those guys, Dr. Schaff and Mike. And it was, yeah, we got to meet them, and yeah, it was great.
So it must have been very kind of bittersweet to meet other families that are in very similar situations in terms of what their child has and being able to relate to them and also meet the geneticists.
Yeah, it definitely is. We were excited to meet the other families, but we were also a little nervous about it because Tess is seven, and we knew going into that weekend in Texas that a bunch of kids a lot older were going to be there, you know. So my wife and I said to each other before we left, we're like, you know, we're about to find out potentially what Tess will be like when she's 18, 19, you know, we're going to meet those kids that are older and kind of see what Tess's potential is. You know, is she going to talk? Is she going to be able to hold a job? You know, what we'll be able to find that out, at least in a sense, you know, to find out what her potential is. And so, yeah, I mean, it was overwhelming in so many ways. I mean, meeting those people and finding out what their struggles are and learning how similar they are to Tess's, but also very different. I mean, there's a wide variety of symptoms here and degrees of those symptoms. And this disease is pretty closely linked to Prader-Willi syndrome, which you probably have heard of. That's a little less rare. It's still a rare disease, but you may have heard of that one. And then
that's one of the imprinting disorders. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, one of the hallmarks of that one that I have heard about for years is the hyperphagia, where your kid is just eating and doesn't have kind of an off switch, doesn't know when they're full and just would be content to continue eating. And so you got to lock up your food and hide the food. And that's, Tess has that definitely. I mean, that's a big thing with her is food. And so, just finding out what everybody else is dealing with and how they're getting along. And you know, I thought that we'd go into that weekend and have a lot of talking, but there's so much of it where you don't talk. You already kind of know what they're dealing with and they know what you're dealing with. And so just being in the same place can be powerful.
And when you went there, were the geneticists and researchers kind of sharing what they know and what they're currently researching in terms of the USP7 gene?
Yeah, they were. So the way they explain it to us is the gene is kind of like, have you ever seen one of those? It's a dimmer switch, like all that can turn the lights up and down. It's called a rheostat. And so they call the USP7 gene kind of a rheostat. That's what they said in their paper, that in typical individuals like us, the USP7 gene works properly. The rheostat works. And so what it does is fine-tune exactly what's happening in our cells in order to make protein recycling happen properly. And so in you and me, it's working fine. You know, it's dialed in exactly the right amount of everything. And so the rheostat works in us, but in these kids, the rheostat is broken. And that is why they have this disease, because they can't regulate things in their cells properly. And as a result, the protein recycling stuff is not happening the way it's supposed to happen. And so what they've been saying to us is that it's difficult to know, you know, what we can do at this point. I mean, they are very optimistic about therapeutics. And in fact, in the paper, they even refer to therapeutic potential, trying to directly impact the way protein recycling happens. And there's a ton of research out there about USP7, you know, if you go on PubMed or you look up medical publications, there is a lot being written about the gene, but it's looking at the ubiquitin pathway from a different direction, in that what all those researchers are trying to do is decrease the amount of activity in USP7. And that's because it plays a role in tumors, in cancer. So if you look at someone with cancer, you look at their USP7 gene, it's doing way too much. That gene is out of control. And so all that research and any pharma stuff that's going on with USP7 is trying to push that back down, you know, decrease that activity, get that under control. And we are coming at it from a different angle. With these kids, there isn't enough USP7 activity. It's a loss of function. And so we want to bump it up. And so, yes, this is really rare. Yes, there are only 23 people in the world that we know of so far, but the researchers have reason to believe that this is going to, if you can solve what's going on with these kids and figure out the mechanism of harm and exactly what's happening with USP7, you could potentially unlock the key to cancer here, in a sense, because their activity is much lower than everybody else. And you know, the logic would suggest that, you know, they're cancer proof in a way, that they, that tumors are much less likely to come up in them. You know, in other words, these kids are an example of what all those anti-cancer drugs are trying to accomplish. You know, they're trying to bump down the activity, and in these kids, their activity, their USP7 activity is low.
And this is a connection that a lot of people may not realize in rare disease research, is that looking at these rare diseases and seeing how different genes and maybe their expression level of what you're talking about differs between maybe a typical normal healthy person and someone affected by one of these disorders, is that's a lot of data we can use to actually look at other, you know, drug development in diseases and cancers that affect a much larger number of people.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's a million examples of these happy accidents in medicine. You know, Viagra came up as a treatment for hypertension, but we all know that's not what it used, right? It's used for now, right? I mean, but that was an accident. They just kind of said the hypertension isn't really being reduced, but there's this other interesting side effect. We should pursue that. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's something to that.
And so you've mentioned a couple things in explaining the gene, but would you mind sharing some of the symptoms that your daughter has along with other kids affected by USP7?
Yeah, certainly. So pretty much across the board, all the kids have a speech issue of some variety, and that varies. Tess is nonverbal, and she has a mixed expressive receptive language disorder. So in other words, she doesn't speak, and we also are not sure what she's able to understand from us. But there are other kids in the group that do have words, and they have apraxia of speech, or they have other speech issues going on. So speech is a big one. Autism is also pretty prevalent in the group. There's a cognitive delay basically across the board. Everybody seems to have that. There are a lot of eye issues. And with Tess, it turns out her issue is cortical visual impairment. So her eyes work properly for the most part. It's just a processing issue, that what the eyes are telling her brain is kind of where the breakdown is there. She's short for her age. She kind of fell off the growth curve in terms of height and weight a few years back. And so she's getting growth hormone now. And that's a pretty common thing in the Prader-Willi group as well, I understand. And she has the hyperphagia thing that the Prader-Willi kids have. And then there's some other stuff that the other kids have that Tess doesn't have, like seizures is a big one. Hypogonadism is another one, and Tess doesn't have that. Some kind of behavior issues sometimes, like aggressive kind of behaviors, things along those lines. So, yeah.
And so I'm curious of the connection that, as you said, there's a lot of crossover of symptoms between Prader-Willi syndrome and USP7. What gene is USP7 on? Do you know? Or sorry, what chromosome, what gene?
Oh, 16, yeah.
16, chromosome, okay, 16, interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just thinking of you know, how that's related and everything.
Yeah. And so there's a third disease. Sorry, there's a third disease called Schaaf-Yang syndrome that Dr. Schaaf also discovered. And that's related to these two diseases as well. So there's kind of the three: Prader-Willi, Schaaf-Yang, and our disease are all pretty closely related. And so the three groups are talking to each other a lot and saying, oh, you guys have that? We have that too. And, you know, how are you working through that? And but also trying to figure out ways that we can collaborate and help each other.
And maybe possibly share certain medications if one has been established as helping one Definitely. Group of people. Huh, interesting. Mm-hmm. And so what's the next step for the community in research? What's currently going on now? What's the cutting edge?
Well, when we were at Baylor in April, we had been kind of in a holding pattern before that. Dr. Schaaf said to us, please don't raise any money for USP7 or take any steps along those lines to form a nonprofit. Just hold off for now, is what he said. And the reason was that he couldn't verify in a lab that the mutation in USP7 was definitely causing this disease in Tess or in the other new patients that he had found. And so that all changed in April when we were there at Baylor, because he said, I now have proof. I now can tell you that this mutation is causing this disease. And the way he proved it was that everybody had a very similar brain MRI. He put them all side by side, and the similarities were staggering, he said. And so that was enough for him. That was enough proof. And so in April, he said, okay, guys, go ahead. Please start a foundation, raise some money. You know, let's fund some research here. And so that's the next step, is starting basically this past May. We, the USP7 families, have started a nonprofit. It's USP7.org. And it's called another name that doesn't roll off the tongue, but it's Foundation for USP7-Related Diseases. And so our goal is to cure the disease. And we're going to do this in two ways. One of them is to find more patients, and the other is to fund more research. And so what we're really trying to do is just get the word out, you know, to find more patients. We just want more people to know that we're out there. I have every reason to believe that there's a ton of families that are in the same position that we were in. Maybe they've had whole exome sequencing done, and they have that genetic report from GeneDx or whoever, and it's sitting on their desk at home, and it says USP7, you know, variant of unknown significance, and they're thinking that they're at the end of the road, and that's just because they don't know about us yet. And so we're really trying to let them know we're out here. We've made a short film that's called Tess Is Not Alone. It's 3 minutes, and then there's a longer version, an 8-minute version that we're going to show at Disorder, the Rare Disease Film Festival in Boston in a few weeks in October. But just getting people to watch that film and share it and get it into the hands of those families who are seeking answers. Because I think what happens is, you know, when you don't have an answer, you have no choice but to join the communities that relate to whatever's going on with your child. Like, you know, for a really long time, my only way to get info was the hypotonia group on Facebook, you know, because Tess has hypotonia, she has low tone. And without a traditional sort of, you know, community and ribbon and awareness week, you know, all we could do is work with the symptoms our daughter has, the vision stuff. You know, I was in a vision group, and I'm still in these groups, but you know, I know that there's a ton of families who are in those groups who are still searching. And so we really want to get the word out to them. And as far as the funding piece, you know, we just had a big t-shirt sale. We wanted to get t-shirts to people in all 50 states and as many countries as we can, and get them to post those pictures and share them. And so we have a map on our website of people who posted photos so far, and we're making a pretty good dent in the states so far. We have about half the states, I think, so far, and we're going to do another t-shirt sale soon, and we just have a lot of ideas about fundraising. And so, you know, getting on our website and checking out our newsletter and following us on Facebook, those are the ways to find out what we're doing these days.
And not only are you doing all of that, you also have your own podcast, Stronger Every Day. Care to give people a little glimpse of what that is so you can hook them into subscribing?
Sure. So I've been doing the show for a couple of years now, a little over 2 years, and I just did the episode 138. So it's a weekly podcast, and it's just about our life with Tess. It's just about kind of what we do week to week, whatever's going on with her, you know, what it's like to have to childproof your house when you have a 7-year-old who's getting really tall and puts everything in her mouth, you know, or like, you know, still being in diapers at this point, or, you know, you're at a family gathering and somebody says something really insensitive about your daughter and her disabilities, or, you know, Dana is Tess's brother. He's 11. And, there's a lot on the show about siblings and how to take care of them and make sure that, you know, my wife and I aren't screwing him up too much. You know, we're trying to give him time and space and understand his frustrations, because I think, you know, it's hard for him to be with his friends and see what their sibling relationships are like and recognize how different his is with Tess. You know, he's great with her and he loves her and is really good to her. But, you know, there are some frustrations there for sure. And so that's what the show is just, it's just a really honest look at what's going on with us for the week. Tests in school, tests at IEPs. I swear on the show. Sometimes there's a little bit of profanity, just it makes me feel better.
It makes it real.
Yeah, I think so.
Definitely. And that last episode was about going back to school, right? And how kind of that's changing from summer into now the academic season.
Yeah, that's right. Tess starting second grade, and she likes structure. She loves school. She loves being there. She likes to be busy, and so yeah, the show was about that, and it was good to see her back at school and happy again.
Definitely. Yeah. So listeners can listen to this one and Stronger Every Day is Bo's podcast over there. And he's got so many episodes. So you guys can go catch up on those. Well, do you have any parting words and advice for fellow parents that are in either the kind of category of having a child that's undiagnosed and, you know, you were there a few years ago and parents of kids with rare diseases?
Oof, yeah, definitely.
It's a small question, right?
You're definitely going to find out who your real friends are. I would say it's a great idea to do whatever you can to find more patients. Matt Mite's blueprint is a great starting point. If you just look at it's mattmite.net, and it's just, I want to say it's using the internet to find other rare patients. I also think it's a great thing to take care of yourself. That's something that I is important to think about. I mean, this is not a sprint. This is a marathon. I mean, when you're still dealing with essentially a toddler, like at age 7, like we are, you know, you've got to, it's a marathon. You know, you got to remember to take good care of yourself and try to get sleep, and also to take breaks with your spouse, try to remind each other why you liked each other to begin with. You know, because this is hard. It's hard. And, you know, in a typical scenario, the toddler years are over by, you know, age 2 or 3, and you can kind of move forward from there. But when you have this prolonged caretaking period, it can take its toll, and you can end up having all of your talk with your spouse be about therapies and appointments and, you know, what I think of as kind of arrangements talk. And you know, it's good to have some talk that has nothing to do with that. That just has to do with, you know, each other and you know, why you liked each other to begin with, I guess I should say. So that's what I would say. It's important to take breaks.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much, Bo, for coming on and sharing about your daughter Tess and family and really about the rare disease community, and especially your specific rare disease community of USP7, of that gene and the associated disorders and diseases that go with that. You guys can check out USP7.org. That's what Bo and I mentioned earlier. That's the foundation where you can find lots of information and t-shirts he mentioned. Also, the video that he mentioned is available at bit.ly/TessArmy. So you can check that out. And that's also going to be at the Disorder Rare Disease Film Festival in Boston, which is taking place October 2nd and 3rd. So if you're in the area, definitely come check it out. More information about that is at rarediseasefilmfestival.com. So thank you so much again for coming on the show.
Yeah, really thanks, appreciate Kira. It. Thanks for having me.
And if you're interested in having more episodes of DNA Today, you can go to dnapodcast.com. I'm on Twitter at DNA Podcast, and any questions for myself or Bo, you can send in at info@dnapodcast.com. I'll be sure to forward him anything that you know, you want to ask him. So thanks for listening, and join me next week to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.
We're all made of the same chemical DNA.